Hello and welcome back to Sharp Scratch. You're listening to episode 114, Navigating Grief in Medicine. This is a podcast brought to you by the BMJ, where medical students, junior doctors, and expert guests come together to discuss all the things that you need to know to be a good doctor, but that you might not get taught at medical school. I'm Eva, and this year I'm the editorial scholar at the BMJ, looking after all the content that BMJ student will be producing. I'm also a medical student at Lancaster Medical School, taking some time out of my studies between my third and fourth years. Today we are joined by three panellists, Judy, Anna, and a new panellist, Elizabeth. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, hello, my name is Judy. I'm a fourth year medical student studying in Poland.
Hi everyone, my name's Anna. I am a junior doctor currently in my first year of training in obstetrics and gynaecology, which I do up in Newcastle in the northeast of England.
Hi, my name's Elizabeth and I'm a fourth year medical student at UCL.
It's so lovely to have you all joining us today. I would also love to welcome our expert guest. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, so I'm Hilary Williams. I'm a medical oncologist, which means I'm a chemotherapy expert. So I've had a long career looking after patients with, you know, a lot of people are in a palliative situation and do die, sadly, of their cancer. But also my background is, you know, in acute medicine and like you as a medical student and a junior doctor, so lots of experiences I hope to share, and really pleased to be on this podcast, so thanks very much.
Oh, I'm so pleased to have you join us today, Hilary. So medics, throughout our careers and our lives, we are surrounded by grief. We grieve for our patients and we grieve with our patients. And so I thought in today's episode, we could talk a little bit about grief in all the forms it comes in. While an early episode of Sharp Scratch, hosted by Anna, explored coping with death, I think it's fair to say that since the pandemic, the experiences of medical students with regards to loss and grief and death have changed quite dramatically. I thought in this episode we could explore a little bit about what it means to grieve, how we can grieve, and how we can support our colleagues and patients through their grief too. So Hilary, just to start us off then, what actually is grief? What does it mean to grieve?
Well, that's a challenging question, isn't it? I mean, I think I've been around for a long time, and to some extent there's a professional and a personal grief, but there isn't a complete separation of those. And I think increasingly you realise that you can't sort of put things in your briefcase, as it were, at the end of the day and leave it all at the front door. And I think a grief for patients is sometimes perhaps a feeling that it's huge and complex, isn't it? It might just be a real feeling of sadness for loss of them as a sort of person in the world, and recognising the role they played in the world and for them and their family. And it is odd, but you do tend to sort of, whatever stage you are in your career, you do seem to align yourself with people at, you know, your age. So perhaps if you're young, you particularly feel the grief of a young person. Not that that's ever easy. But, you know, I know when I had young kids and I was looking after patients with young kids who were very seriously ill, I found that particularly painful. So I think it is that's just feeling of loss, really. And I think it's recognising that that might be very immediate. And it might be something that, you know, then you tuck away, but it also might come out at sort of later times in your life. And sometimes it comes out in odd ways. Sometimes it's obvious you're sort of crying and can talk about it. But I think it's also important to recognise if you're away from work and perhaps not feeling yourself and feeling a bit grumpy and touchy with everyone else, it may actually be some aspects of unresolved grief, and just noticing that can be quite helpful. I think how we grieve for our sort of families and our close friends is a little bit different, because they probably, you know, are much more part of our day-to-day life. But there's the same issues, isn't it, of loss, really. But sometimes, you know, loss and grief can be, if someone's had a long, fulfilled life, it may be more about a celebration of their life as well. It's not always necessarily incredibly tough. You know, there is always going to be a sadness of losing someone, but sometimes people have got to the end of a long, fulfilled life. There's also an element of celebration as well, I think.
I totally agree with what you were saying about that division between personal and professional grief. And I often, you know, sometimes you do see things on social media, people saying, you know, you've got to leave everything at the door when you leave work. And you know, in some ways that is true. There are ways of, I guess, having a bit of separation there. But when I think about patients who I've looked after as a foundation doctor who have perhaps had poor outcomes or have died whilst I've been looking after them, I don't see how that could not affect your life outside of work, because, you know, you're in a position that potentially not a lot of people of your age, you know, have had those experiences. How many other 25, 26-year-olds do you know who have been looking after people who are really unwell and who have died and have potentially been, you know, the last person that sat with that person whilst they've died? I'm very lucky in that I've still got all of my grandparents. I don't have an enormous amount of personal experience of grief, but my husband's grandfather died recently. And when I was talking to my mother-in-law about it, that was the first time that she'd seen someone who was dead. And I just thought, gosh, you know, like, I've seen probably 50 dead people. And then I think about the experiences of my sister, who was a staff nurse during COVID, who's seen, you know, cared for lots more people who have died than I have. It's not about having that complete separation, but it's about having a reflective process that's personal to you that can mean that you can marry those things up. But I think something that is really hard as a doctor is when you feel that perhaps the best has not been done by someone. And that's really difficult, be that in the journey that they've had through their care, or if you feel that, you know, the circumstances around their death have perhaps not been what you might like for someone who you love. I think that's something that I've found particularly difficult to come to terms with sort of as a doctor. And I think that can be really hard, and it can, you know, it can creep up on you sometimes. I totally agree with what you're saying. I still think about some of the patients who, when I was in F1, which was over a couple of years ago now, and I'm sure that you probably still think of patients, Hilary, who you looked after maybe many years ago, and it sticks with you. In my specialty, grief is potentially slightly different. And, you know, when we come on to talk about grieving with patients, I think that's probably something that we have a lot more in the sort of obstetric side of my specialty. But, you know, you bring those lessons through into other places where you're looking after people, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I find the whole division between the professional and personal grief is actually quite a new concept for me. And obviously, interesting to figure out how divided those should be and how much those should overlap. Because I guess, yeah, like, starting in medical school, it's something like, oh my god, I need to like kind of create who this professional person is, who obviously it's going to be completely different to who I am personally, but at the same time it's quite hard to then know what like the exact emotions that I should feel kind of for each of these patients should be, because it's so different to what it should be personally. But that doesn't mean it's any different or less important or less valid. And then I think there was something actually Hilary was saying as well about how it can be a celebration that like made me think about another patient that I've seen. And I remember he was quite old and I felt really bad in that I kind of found his death quite moving and quite beautiful, and it was sad. And I think another like medical student found it quite sad. But I remember leaving and being like, oh, that was actually a really beautiful consultation. And he'd been very aware of us as medical students as well and had wanted to give us advice about like what we should do with the rest of our lives. And I remember just finding that so sweet and beautiful. And obviously it's really sad, but I remember leaving it being like, oh, I don't know if I should be sad. I feel quite like moved and almost uplifted by this experience and this loss. But then at the same time, I was like, obviously if he were my grandparent, I think it would feel like a much like very different, like it would feel like something from my life is, my personal life is going. But there it's like someone I don't know who's being very brave and has so much courage.
Yeah, I think it's quite a similar experience for me as well. I think as a med student, we are kind of watching from the periphery of what's going on. I think the experience would be very different for doctors that are taking care of the patient, because they're a lot more involved in like the patient care and like the things that are going on. But I found in my experience, sort of being in an observer sort of role, kind of like how Elizabeth said, it was, you know, there was a level of being able to see the optimistic side. And I thought that was quite a comforting thing to see, the way that they're being so sort of cared for before like having their final moments. So I think as a medical student, the side that we see is slightly a bit different than how doctors would feel more sort of responsible for the patients and then have to deal with a different sort of type of grief. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing to think about, especially at this stage in our sort of career.
I just wanted to pick up and maybe explore a little bit about what you were saying, Elizabeth, about this idea of what we're allowed to feel as medical professionals. And it's definitely something like I totally resonate with what you're saying about, you know, when I came to medical school, I had this image. I didn't have any doctors in my family or anything. So I'd probably maybe watch like a few too many episodes of like House. And I was like, you know, you're going to have this professional persona and they're going to be like very clever, but like, you know, very detached from everything, because that's how you can be totally objective and all of this. And anyone who knows me now, I'm like, to completely on the opposite side of that. But you know, that's what I thought when I was 18. I went to medical school. And you do sort of, as you move through your career, both in medical school and when you become a junior doctor, there is this sort of battle. Well, at least I had this sort of battle in my head that was like, oh my God, am I allowed to feel this? Am I allowed to feel sad about this patient? Is this my grief? Like, am I allowed to have ownership of this grief when there's people who, you know, are this person's loved ones who are going to have a completely different type of grief? And I think a lot of that comes from pressure, like from other people in the profession, right? I think patients probably, if you ask them, might be pleased that the people who are caring for them do have a level of emotional connection with them. But yeah, I didn't know, Hilary, if you had any reflections on that from your career.
It's such an important discussion, isn't it? And I totally get that. I mean, I think I'm happiest and best at what I do when I'm generally myself. And I think that's really important to remember, because if we're all trying to be something that we're not, it's incredibly stressful and we probably are pretty ineffective. But it's a little bit about, you know, you can't bring yourself to work the one that you might slob around the house in and kind of swear and complain about the washing up and the hoovering or get cross with your kids, can you? Because that isn't actually what's helpful in a professional setting. So what I kind of think about is trying to think about myself that's a little bit calmer, because I can be someone who's a little bit scatterbrained or a little bit kind of impulsive maybe at times, and I quite enjoy that. You know, I'm quite a creative person, I like sport, I like having fun, and it's bringing myself to work, but one that perhaps is a little bit more measured. It's not about having a sort of shell at all, it's the opposite of that, but accepting that actually you are a professional, and so obviously in the consultation, you know, people need confidence in you as someone who's calm, focused, organized, and has that knowledge base, but it's always very, very much a human being. So one of the things I love is just chatting to my patients. We might chat about, you know, where I work in Wales. We talk about the countryside or what they can see, you know, in their garden or whatever. And sharing those things, I think, is really, really good. It's just a little bit about, and I think this day is something, you know, we absolutely all learn to do. And I think in the past, it's very much you have to be this kind of persona with this incredibly professional shell, and almost you put it on and took it off. But I think that made us a bit battle worn, and perhaps it made us not the people that we wanted to be. So I think it's a really important discussion. And one thing I've had to learn is actually to recognize perhaps when I'm less good doctor or less good a person, because I'm just tired, a bit hungry, or I'm feeling sad and I'm grieving. And perhaps it's important at those points in your day, and I'd absolutely say to anyone who's a junior, if you're just feeling a little bit edgy, learn to recognise that it's always okay. You know, 99 times out of 100, it's okay to take a short gap. You might, you know, for me, it's just often a cup of tea in 5 minutes. And I think an important connection of grief is actually, you know, when we're looking after patients, as we do try and acknowledge when we've lost someone we're particularly close to, or just, you know, lost a patient. And actually just integrating that a little bit more into your day, or having a cwtch, as we say in Wales, or a little, you know, a few tears, can actually help restore you to what is your kind of, you can't always be your best self. You know, we all have sad and bad days, don't we? But yeah, it's a really important question about how we sort of integrate these two things. but also recognizing at times it's a busy old job and we just have to crack on, don't we? And we want to get home or do our stuff. So we can't 100% be full on all the time as well. I think we do all switch in and out of modes a bit, but that's probably okay as well, as long as we're not overdoing that and we're sort of true to ourselves and true to our teams and things.
No, it's incredibly helpful, Hilary. It's so insightful, to be honest. It's something that, again, like Anna, a first-gen Eurasian medical student who didn't really know doctors before this, and I'm also a very emotional person, in good ways and bad ways, it's something I've really struggled with. So, like, hearing it from yourself has been very, very helpful.
No, I was just going to comment as well on kind of like there what Hilary was saying about being human and knowing how you react. And there's kind of more like, I guess now at the moment, because it's so, or at least for me, kind of it's so early in my journey, it's like, it's kind of the first time I'm coming across these things. So when I'm reacting to them, it's a bit like, oh my God, is this how I'm going to be reacting for the rest of my career, for the rest of my life? I don't really know. And it's kind of like, I think sometimes it can then feel a bit daunting that like, it's kind of creating these models now that maybe I need to take forward, or whether it's about then taking the experience and just learning from it and maybe doing it the same or maybe doing it differently is quite like, it's quite weird to then think about it in that sense, that it's like, this is something I'm going to deal with again and again and again.
That's, it's been such an informative and such a like very lovely conversation about this, actually, and I'm looking forward to talking a little bit more about this and about how we can grieve alongside our patients, but that will be right after this message. So as we kind of alluded to in earlier on in the episode, it's a huge part of the role of medics and of doctors that we're all aware of all the time, but seem so rarely to talk about. We have to sit with the suffering of others and often take some of that on board ourselves. And while medical schools can teach learning objectives about the physiological process of dying or the right way to break bad news, it can be very difficult to teach how to grieve with patients and grieve for patients. So Hilary, in your clinical role as a medical oncologist, you've probably got more experience than most people on navigating this. So how do you grieve with patients?
I think one of the first things that I think has helped me over the years is realizing that, and this may sound a little bit odd, I'm absolutely can't take responsibility for the patient's cancer or that outcome. What I can help them do is make the right choices for them through that journey. And I do think that's quite fundamental and quite important, because I think it can be absolutely overwhelming if you genuinely think that you can save someone absolutely against the odds, because I think that's what we can't do as doctors. And I think it's a tough one. But what I can do is I hope, in the right way, help someone navigate their way. And within that, you know, the choices quite, feel quite bleak, but often it is about them making choices. So quite often I talk to people about whether they do or don't want chemotherapy, for example. And then maybe that enables them to do the things that they do or don't want to do in what may be a very difficult period of their life. The other thing I think that I feel very committed to doing is, you know, and I'm not a palliative care doctor, but I do think it's really important to enable them to make choices that perhaps enable them to have a better death, or at least support them with that. So, for example, having discussions about what they think about towards the end of their life, about whether they feel like being at home is the right thing for them and their family. So I think those are the things that I think I do that help me feel that I'm doing a good job, or that I'm doing something quite worthwhile, and supporting them through that journey, which, you know, recognizing that loss for them and their family. And sometimes that's, you know, that's an incredibly rewarding, satisfying part of your career, isn't it? And I think, you know, even as I think the time we spend as a medical student or a junior doctor just with people at these really difficult moments is just incredibly, incredibly important. So I think in many ways that's enough. And then it's just recognizing that we'll feel very sad, or it might feel actually that you've done something really important for someone at an important point of their life, and that family may be incredibly grateful. You know, my dad, he was 90, died in hospital last year. And obviously, I was around for most of it. But the way that staff talked to my mum and my family was incredibly important to them. You know, and he was 90 and he was frail, and he actually was very much accepted at the end of his life. But for my mum and family, they really noticed how people spoke to them. And they just made it quite straightforward and clear. So I think it is, you know, there are times when the grief of someone can be overwhelming. And I, you know, sometimes the loss just feels too much. And actually often the stuff around you help you at that one time. You know, one particular patient I was really, really upset about, you know, somehow someone appeared with a cup of tea and things. So often the team around you do notice that. So yeah, I would say just keep thinking, keep learning, don't judge yourself and be human. But it's a right old journey, you know, but for most of us, it is a journey. We just have to keep thinking and learning about it.
And I think particularly when you first start working as a doctor, like as Judy said earlier, I think my experience was quite different from being a medical student, although I'd actually done a palliative care rotation and I'd volunteered in a hospice for quite a while before I even came to medical school. So I thought, you know, I'm au fait with this, like I've had these chats and this, that and the other. But I think it is subtly different when you're part of the medical team that's, you know, has responsibility for looking after someone and has a responsibility to their family as well, to keep them informed and to, where possible, allow them to make choices. I remember one particular patient whose family had a very difficult time sort of getting everyone together, and they really wanted to know from me sort of what was going to happen, and I couldn't tell them what was going to happen. And that is a really difficult situation to be in, because it can be very difficult to communicate that ambiguity to people. So I think it is subtly different when you've been looking after someone as a junior doctor. You tend to be sort of on the same ward, so you may have looked after that person for quite a long time.
To kind of bounce off that onto the medical student point of view, I think it's one of the things, and this don't, not in a bad way, like not that I miss people being very sick, but one of the things that I miss about medical school and I miss about placement being not on it this year is the time that you have for patients. I think I'm so acutely aware all the time when I'm on placement that I one day I will be a doctor and I will be on the medical team and I will have all of these responsibilities for all these people. I won't just be able to sit with people and hear those lovely stories and learn those like lovely life lessons like the ones Elizabeth was talking about earlier. And I think it's just an awareness. I don't have any of the knowledge of management plans or how to have those really difficult conversations yet, but I think there is a role for medics beyond just observing, that you can, while you're a student, like give people the time that you do have.
I feel like from my experience, so much of medical school is about the patient that's in front of you. And actually, to be honest, I don't really feel like I've had huge amounts of interactions with patient families and how to navigate how like their loved ones are dealing with their loss. So I was just kind of actually wondering whether Anna and Hilary had any advice for like learning about that and how to navigate that.
I mean, yeah, I was just going to quickly say, never forget that little bit of time with the patients to learn their story is just so fundamental and will often do more than the next scan. If there's anything that you guys take away, it's talk to patients before filling in another form. And also then, you know, talking to our colleagues and deep breathing. I think we have to be realistic as, you know, medical students, junior doctors, we can only do one thing, you know, or a couple of things. If we're looking after a patient towards the end of their life, we can absolutely communicate with the family. It's very important. But we're not actually responsible for how they manage their own grief, because we just get overwhelmed by that. And that, you know, and it is a bit, I think, signposting them, supporting them, but we can't take everything on. And I think it is about working in teams, isn't it? And recognising that often there's people with a little bit more capacity in the hospital to do that. And obviously, if someone's extremely distressed, you want to support them. But, you know, sometimes people will come back and talk to us after the loss of a loved one, and that's absolutely fine, and I'd always want to do that. And sometimes it can help with them with grieving process. But, you know, don't worry that you cannot sort out all the problems in the world or all the problems for your patients and families. You can professionally and holistically and compassionately do your bit.
So one of the things that I think I struggled with when I was a junior doctor was this idea that I had to I need to have these experiences, right, in order to learn, like learn more about what my style of communication was as a doctor and learn how to, you know, do that breaking bad news. And I think something that always made me nervous going into those conversations was, okay, I'm still learning, but I had this huge awareness that for these people, this is the only time they're going to have this conversation. Like this is the one time that someone's going to come and tell them that their loved one is dead or is, you know, coming to the end of their life. And I just felt like I felt an immense pressure about that. And it's really interesting because I now don't have those conversations as much being in the specialty that I work in, but I have other difficult conversations. And I still have that feeling of like, okay, this may be the 50th time that I've had this conversation and I'm still learning how to do it. But for this person, it's the only time that they're ever going to have this said to them, and I need to do it properly. So I don't know, I feel like that was something that was just challenging for me.
I've had more experience as a relative than I have as, I guess, a medic in situations like that. Like I've had more personal losses than I've had professional ones, if we're going to split it that way. And Anna, I know that it's probably a really hard feeling, but it's actually quite comforting as a relative to hear that those conversations still make you nervous, because I guess you want the people looking after you to realize the weight of those conversations. And that to me is just a sign that you care. I don't know if that is helpful, but that's certainly how I interpreted it. It's like, it just is a sign that you care about the people on the other side of the conversation and want to do it right. And of course, that's going to be tricky because it's by nature a difficult thing to have to do, even after 50 times.
That's the other thing that we maybe haven't touched on yet is particularly thinking about my, you know, recent personal experience of someone that I know being coming towards the end of their life. And I wasn't there, and I didn't want to, you know, when you feel quite aware of the fact that you're sort of a bit medical and you don't want to insert yourself and you don't want to, you know, come across as being overbearing. But I said to Connor, I said, I think you should go now. And he was really grateful for that, because his granddad actually didn't live much longer. It was very nice in the end, you know, as you were kind of saying earlier, like he had a long fulfilling life and he had a short, peaceful end of life, which is really, really nice. But you do sometimes have that feeling at the back of your mind, like when you've got family that are in hospital and you're like, oh no, there's going to be some tricky conversations going on. You have that empathy for the medical team and the nursing team as well, at the same time as having that empathy for your family that are in that situation.
I've never been sort of in a situation where I've gotten the chance to observe bad news being broken to a family or anything along those lines. What I do remember is when I was working on the wards, when a patient was passing away and all of their family had come to visit them, in the same sort of bay, there was another patient who was sort of, there was some disruption from another patient, and it was very stressful for the staff to try to control the situation while also trying to make sure that the patient in the bay next to the patient was having, you know, like this nice family send off. So it was a very stressful situation to watch the staff try to navigate.
And then Hilary, I guess as the expert in navigating situations like that, is there anything you can speak to that?
No, I mean, absolutely recognise that. And I think it's, you know, for you guys coming to NHS at the moment, I think that's happening far too much, and something I think we're absolutely aware of. I guess it's one of the reasons, perhaps one of our skills is to sort of recognise people who are heading towards the end of their life, and, you know, where possible, making sure they get the care in the community so they're not facing those things. But the reality is it is happening now, and just hope the staff are compassionate. But it's, no, I'm really sorry to hear that experience. I think hopefully it's rare, and I think A&Es are trying to sort of recognise that's happening and actually finding the right spaces for people. But no, just acknowledge it to see that is really, really tough, isn't it?
And I think something we maybe haven't talked as much about this time is when people die unexpectedly and how difficult that can be.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of grieving, and I guess complicated grief as well, that we haven't touched on yet, but maybe we can come back to that just right after this message. Okay, back to the show. So I guess from this episode so far, it has been good to hear that doctors are humans and we don't lose all our feelings when we graduate, I think. And so we've spent a lot of time talking about clinical death in all its forms, but I think sudden death and unexpected death is something that we haven't really touched on so far this episode. So Anna, did you say before the break that was something you've experienced?
Yeah, so first of all, I think I'm more emotional now than I was when I was first year medical student, and I think everyone who knows me will agree that, like, I still, every time I deliver a baby, I'm like, this is brilliant. Not generally that appropriate to cry when you're delivering a baby, but you can have a little tear afterwards. Like, sometimes when I see the dads, I'm just like, so yeah, everyone stay emotional. It doesn't stop you from being able to do your job. But yeah, I think as a medic, unexpected deaths can be really, really difficult. And I can remember a couple of cases when I was an F1 where someone died unexpectedly, and they were definitely some of the more difficult things that I've dealt with as a junior doctor. And I think particularly being in like arrest situations where unsuccessful attempts to resuscitate people can be very distressing. I don't know, maybe that was just because I wasn't going to be a medic or an anaesthetist, but every time I had an involvement with an arrest, I found it really upsetting.
Yeah, I think it's quite reassuring to hear that kind of Eva talking about how they are different experiences. And I think it was exactly an arrest situation that I think saw when I was on my acute rotation. Like, it's probably still a situation where I look back and feel like actually so conflicted again about my role as a medical student, because like obviously the paramedics and the doctors were all busy with this crash call, but it's like this kind of like in the background watching what's going on and watching what's unfolding in this kind of very sudden event, and not being able to contribute to this kind of grieving process that, yeah, kind of this difficulty of being completely unable to help manage this unexpected situation that I think I really struggled with after that.
I think I've honestly never had anything like that in my role as a medical student, though I've worked as a clinical support worker in emergency departments. And I think it's, again, I'm just not a born internal medic. I'm not a born emergency doctor. And it's just this sense of dread. It's strange to me because it's the exact things that you're selected to come to medical school for. It's this sense of empathy and this wanting to do right by people. And then, as you say, Elizabeth, as a medical student, or there is nothing practical that I can do there to help. And that's something I've really struggled with.
But I would say that doesn't mean that, you know, there is a role for you, because your role is there to learn. And sometimes we learn through observation. It doesn't mean that it's inappropriate for you as a student to be in that room. Potentially it means having an awareness of what's going on around you. And if if there's like physically no room, I mean, I'm thinking about the emergencies that we have in obstetrics. If there's sort of physically no room, then yes, you might be an appropriate person to step back. But I think there is also that role for just being present in that situation and observing what people are doing, because, you know, you're serving your future self and your future patients better for when you are the F1 that's holding the crash bleep and you do need to be doing something like citing an IV line or even just scribing. So it's much better to have had a bit of exposure to that, I think, as a medical student, not that you sort of go around the hospital waiting for it to happen. But if you do have that opportunity, I don't think it's necessarily something that you should feel bad about your presence in that situation, if that makes sense.
So a couple of reflections from me. I mean, just, you know, we do a super tough job. And you say, even at, you know, my stage of career, my contemporaries don't do these things and don't see these things. So I think it's just fantastic that you're talking about it, you're recognising it, you're like thinking it through. And I'd say that's just a lifelong lesson. Just keep up with that. And absolutely what Elizabeth said, you know, as exposure to medical school, students going to feel tough. It's going to feel tough at any point, but you absolutely have a right to be there and learn. And I think the description, you know, what you were describing as a young patient coming in and the family member calling them. I mean, it's just heartbreaking, isn't it? I mean, you know, I'm sure if you're a seasoned ED doctor, sadly you see too much of that. But believe me, you know, I mean, people tell you about things that still very, very much affect them. And it's that fine line, isn't it? And I think it's just making sure through your career that you're recognising those tough things. And you might recognise it 3 weeks later, or 3 years or 10 years later, but just a bit of, you know, bit of self-care, a bit of thought about it. And sometimes all you can do is be there and try and resuscitate them. You know, we can't change the destiny of someone's lives, and we can only do what we're trained to do and what we're there for at that time. And I think that's something I've tried to do. And we can always do our absolute best, but it's a tough old job, you know, but fantastic that you're talking about it.
Yeah, but I think what was sort of surprising to me when I was on wards more regularly was the sort of the speed at which things change. And what I mean by that is, so we would have a patient potentially pass away maybe at 12 a.m. and then by 3 a.m. we have a new patient in the same sort of bed. And it just felt like very quick that I thought to myself, is this how it's going to be in the future? Sort of having all of these things going on and then having to move on from it like almost immediately without sort of having to think about the fact that, you know, like a few hours ago there was someone in this bed and there was a family here and now it's a completely new patient. So it is definitely something that I think about and how that would affect doctors in the future. And
I'm so pleased that you brought that up, Judy, because that's something I think I've found the hardest in medical school, full stop. I think it's one of the things that makes me think I'm too soft for medicine. As I say, I've had personal losses close to me in my time at medical school, and each time I've had time to grieve those, I've not been expected to be on the wards the next day. There has been a recognition that I have had a loss. And then I contrast that with the clinical patients who I've seen who have passed or who I've seen close to the end of their lives, and like, as you say, there's someone new in the bed hours later. There's, you know, the doctors just go about their day, and many of the seniors are used to it and experienced and don't feel the need to debrief. But, you know, sometimes as a more junior member, you might have to, or might feel like you have to. And I guess I just wanted to say that, like, as a student, as even as like a first clinical year student, if you feel like you need a debrief, you're allowed to ask for one. Like, it might not even need to be with the doctors that you're working with that day. You can just go to your clinical supervisor and say, I saw this really hard thing, can we talk it out? Like, you can do that, because I just think that's not something that I was ever told.
I think, you know, there are also sort of other things you can do outside of work. I particularly reflected on my GP when I worked in general practice as a foundation year two doctor. It was quite a small practice, and all three of the partners had worked there for many years. And we used to, so when you work in GP as an F2, you're supposed to get a session a week teaching. And my session a week teaching would be with one of the partners. We would go for a walk around the local area, which I was not familiar with at all. So it was really nice for me. And we would basically just like chat. We'd chat about like difficult, you know, difficult cases that I'd seen and whatever. And we would often walk through a cemetery. And one day I said, how many of these people are, you know, people that were known to you? And she was like, oh, loads of them. But, you know, it was a reflective process for her, was that she would often walk through the cemetery on her lunch breaks, and she would think about the people that she'd looked after. And, you know, I just thought that was so nice, because she'd been there for such a long time, and she'd looked after, you know, generations of families that lived in this area. And but she had this levity about it as well, because she you know, she knew she'd done the best that she could by these patients. So I just thought it was really nice. Like, that is one thing you can do. And I know there's a lot of debate about whether people should be, you know, attending funerals and memorials and things like that. And I think there were probably occasions where that's appropriate. So I think there are things you can do outside of work. I am not religious in the slightest, but if I do like looking at churches, And whenever I go in a church, I light a candle, and it's for everyone I've looked after who has died. And you can have little personal ways of doing that that don't have to be, you know, related to like spirituality or anything. Like, you can come up with your own thing, but you know, that's, you can have little practices like within your own life that are for you to remember people that you've looked after, because it's important. It becomes an important part of who you are. And we all come to medical school because we like science and we want to look after people. So why would we then be like, you know, not allowed to be sad when people that we've looked after have died?
Yeah, I think it is a point we haven't touched on, is that sort of what ritual, funerals and kind of the arts bring to this. And certainly for me, it's really important. And also just recognising that you might be with families and patients that have a very different ritual around death and loss than you do from your own upbringing. So I think we may not be an expert on that, but just recognising sometimes that's really important, and perhaps being able to ask people what their own needs are around death is quite an important one. But also, yeah, absolutely, I spend quite a lot of time walking, looking at the hills, looking at the clouds, looking at trees, you know, having rituals, lighting candles. Yeah, I think for me there are ways of thinking about the sort of bigger aspects of life, and I think newer hospitals are trying to incorporate that. I think there's a bit more recognition that staff need breakaway space now to just be there and kind of kick back. I think it can be quite publicly exposed, can't it? You know, the canteen, for example. So I'm a big supporter of spaces where staff can just go and talk, chat, you know, talk about what's happened that day, and that may help. And also I think hospitals are doing a little bit more to recognise, you know, that they need spaces and arts and things can be quite creative in terms of, you know, tree planting, etc. So I think really good points. You know, it can be really helpful to find your own way of just recognising what's happened, where it is in the world, and perhaps that helps you deal a little bit.
Has anyone any final thoughts?
I work with doctors from Egypt and India, and I think, you know, losing family and then you're in a British health system, I think, so you might want to just acknowledge that. And then I think that often we take our own cultural understandings to death, and they may not be what that family's culture and understandings and religion brings.
Because it kind of followed on actually from what Anna was talking about in terms of when she's had a conversation with people, and it's always been, and it's like kind of, she might have had this conversation and it's a new conversation, but she's following on from it and she's still learning. And it's kind of like, it also feels like every time there's a new culture, there's a new background, there's a new meaning of death behind, like in every single, in like family that's sat in front of you, and making sure it's not entirely like a regurgitated breaking bad news with some chunking and checking. And
yeah, no, I think it's huge. It's something I've had a little bit of experience of. Judy, you might be the same, because Irish people have a very distinctive way of mourning their dead. Actually, my first clinical year was in COVID, and I was exposed to a lot of, like, I guess, loss, and the way that was being handled at the time was very different to my own culture. That disconnect I really struggled with. It made me feel a lot farther from home, even though I'm objectively not far from home at all. I'm closer to home than I am to like the office in London. But I think it's certainly something, as I said earlier, that as a medical student you have time to really understand, but the patient in front of you, you've got time to talk to them about the things that matter to them. And I suppose that is a role that medical students can have, is having those discussions with patients about, you know, their own cultures and backgrounds, and feeding those back to the team to see if there's anything that the actual experts can do to make things easier for them when that time does come.
Yeah, and I think it's just another way of learning, isn't it? That during your medical student training, you recognise that people are going to bring different stories to this, and that's a really good time in your training, because actually probably when it gets a bit busier you might feel like, gosh, I haven't got time to think this all through. But also it's about being human, isn't it? And if you're not quite sure, just that sort of human inquiry. But I guess just recognizing we're not all the same in this is that, yeah, I mean, beautifully put, I think, around that loss you saw during COVID and how it's handled can make you feel quite separate between your own upbringing and the culture you've been kind of suddenly embedded in, and that can feel quite tough, can't it?
Absolutely. It's all so important. Sadly, I think that is all that we have time for today, but thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And thank you to everyone at home for listening to this episode of Sharp Scratch. If you like our show, I would love it if you could support us by leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts, or by sharing it with the people that you know. Talk to your friends about it, because that really helps people to find the show. Please do keep in touch, especially if you yourself have any stories to share about the topics being discussed today. You can find us on social media. We are BMJ Student on Twitter, X and Instagram. If you would like to hear other episodes, subscribe to Sharp Scratch wherever you get your podcasts, and in 2 weeks' time, you'll be notified of our next episode. Until then, it's goodbye from us.